Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
We're going to talk a little bit more about Sammy Sosa, although this conversation might be a bit more serious when we're talking about Sammy Sosa, along with talking about the long-gone summer. And before I get to Russ Dorsey, I just want to say that often when you hear me talk about issues of race in America, I use the term black instead of African-American. And the reason that I use the term black is because it's a more encompassing term. To be black doesn't mean to be someone who's black in America. It means being black all over the world. I talk about the African or the black diaspora, and that covers people like Sammy Sosa. People who are black, but also may be part of the Spanish diaspora. And trying to get people to understand that is I think a worthy thing to discuss and talk about. And I know that there are plenty of my white brothers and sisters that are like, I'm not sure what to say. Like when we were talking, I'll give you a perfect example. Last week when I brought up Mark Eversley, a couple people texted me about him being the first African American GM for the Bulls. That's incorrect. He's not African American, but he is black. And you can say him being the first black GM, but he's from Canada, so that doesn't make him African-American. And I understand that these are things that are difficult, like there's a semantic aspect to it that some people don't find pleasing, but I think that it's important that you understand that being black goes far beyond just what happens in the United States. And that's why I wanted to invite Russ Dorsey on. Russ covers baseball for MLB.com. He is one of the rising stars in covering baseball in our profession. I think that one of these days you're going to be seeing a whole bunch of documentaries, and Russ is going to be on there with his baritone and his cool hair talking about how things were back in 2019 and how they were in 2020. He joins me now on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline. Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from. You can check it out at alpamonteford.com. What's up, Russ?
Lawrence, what is going on, my G? How are you?
I'm good, man. I've been racking my brain. Like, I've been thinking about this from a purely, like, academic standpoint, because one of my colleagues at DePaul is amazing. Maria De Moya, Dr. Moya De Moya, is from the Dominican, and she and I have had these crazy conversations about what baseball is like in the Dominican Republic, but she didn't cover baseball. Like, she's an academic who happens to love baseball. And I was sitting there, I talked with a couple of authors, and I was like, I wish I knew someone that could really speak intelligently about both the actual baseball along with the social. I was like, wait a minute, Russ was in the Dominican Republic and he covers baseball. So I was like, yes, I got to reach out. So for those who don't know, how much time did you spend immersed in Dominican culture?
So I spent about a month in the Dominican when I was 18 years old on a mission trip with my high school. And it was just really a cool time for me as a African-American from Chicago, first time going out of the country. And it was an eye-opening experience into a different culture. And for me, as a black dude, to go to this country and see all these beautiful, in my opinion, black people of all different beautiful shades and tones that are speaking the same language. And I was fortunate enough to speak the same language and have those people say, "You're one of us." And it's like, no, that's, I appreciate you saying that, but I'm actually from the United States. And even they're just like, oh man, like I couldn't tell with the language and all that. And it was so cool to see that different culture. And then the older I got, the more I got into different parts of Dominican culture. And a part of that is the ugly side of colorism. And knowing what I know about colorism here in the States, seeing it through a different lens in the Dominican, and seeing how the Dominican and Haitian kind of back and forth has come about over the last 150 years, it's been really interesting to kind of compare that with what we see now with the battle between people who consider themselves Afro-Latino or just, you know, Latino or Latinx. So that's kind of my background with it. And it's kind of a unique thing that I have just based on some things that I've gotten experience really early on here in life.
All right. So let me whiteboard this for people who are listening to what Russ and I are talking about. Colorism in the United States plays out where, take someone like me, for example. I am light-skinned, okay? I am a light-skinned black man. I have what people, or I had, I don't have it anymore, but I had what people would consider good hair. That gives me a level of privilege that people who are darker don't have in our country. That's privilege that I openly recognize and I understand from the standpoint of light-skinned people. Light-skinned black people are often thought of as less of a threat than dark-skinned black people. There's inside the black culture, this has been examined, and we try to work through some of our issues as a family in that regard. In the Dominican, you have to understand the history of Hispaniola, of that island, and how the Dominicans were colonialized by the Spanish, and then they were conquered by the Haitians. So you have this back and forth between cultures where in the Dominican, there are a lot of people who feel that darker is worse. And over the last 15 years in the Dominican, we've seen actual atrocities that have befallen darker skinned people in the Dominican because they are darker skinned. So Russ, when you were talking about this, when you were learning more about this, what were the things that you remember that stood out to you in regards to light skinned Dominicans versus dark skinned Dominicans?
Well, it's basically, you know, me and my family, we love history. So diving into this was kind of cool and just getting into the history of the country. And so first, to understand it, you have to go back to the Dominican War of Independence. So 1844 is when the Dominican Republic got their independence from Haiti, right? Fast forward 90 years to the Trujillo dictatorship. So Rafael Trujillo was the dictator in the Dominican from 1930 to 1961 when he was assassinated. But during that time, that was a key point in this whole dark-skinned Dominicans versus lighter-skinned Dominicans or darker-skinned Haitians, and this doctrine of anti-Haitianismo, or in English and here in the States, we would call it anti-Haitianism, right? Where anything black, and I use the term black like you, because at this point in Dominican history, black and Haitian were viewed on the same plane. So anything that was black or anything that was Haitian was viewed as less than or negative. So then you go into how do we get that doctrine and culture still in 2020. Those things continue to be passed down and passed down long after Trujillo was out of power. And then you think about La Masacre de Peral, the Parsley Massacre in 1937, where thousands upon thousands upon thousands of Haitians were murdered under the watch of Trujillo, comes from that hatred of Haitians and darker-skinned people. And now when you look at how darker-skinned people are looked at in the Dominicans who are proud people, who love their country and love who they are, because of the culture that was taught to them based off of this hatred of darkness, dark skin, and being considered, nobody wanted to be considered Haitian. So it's like, what do I have to do to push away from that? And a lot of that is what bothers Black Americans when we say, oh man, like, why don't you embrace your beautiful Black culture? But you're taught for such a long time, and it's passed down to you that Black is not beautiful. We've been able to adopt that here in the States, where it's like, nah, Black is beautiful. For them in the Dominican, it has never been beautiful. And a lot of that comes from this deeply rooted history of self-hatred towards your Blackness. So that's why for me, and I'll tie it into baseball a little bit, that's why Roberto Clemente was so amazing, because he said, no, I'm Puerto Rican, but I'm also Black, and I accept both of those sides as being me. That's who I am. And so when we talk about Sammy Sosa now, it's how does Sammy go from this handsome, charismatic, dark-skinned Dominican dude to the Sammy Sosa we saw last night? And it's just like, you have to consider what deeply rooted things and issues have been a big part of Dominican culture that Sammy grew up with in San Pedro de Macorís, and that dude was on top of the world. That was the king of the Dominican. And even he had to succumb to that pressure of, is dark beautiful? And as we've seen over the last 15, 20 years, the answer to that was no to him.
Yeah. And that's why when you see, I think he had at some point even admitted to doing some skin lightening. He is by no means alone. And by the way, this isn't something that just happens in Caribbean countries. This is something that's happening in Asia as well, where everyone is trying to get lighter, that lighter is seen as better. And if you talk to people from the Philippines, that they'll tell you about the way that they're treated and how they feel about being darker. Like there's always kind of this sliding scale. So with Sammy Sosa, you have a man who has been struggling with his own beauty and identity and who am I, like, this whole time. So when I would see Sosa and him clearly going through these treatments, like, we would be able to see him, it was heartbreaking, because on this, all of us that have dealt with some level of colorism, and I'm sure that some of my Italian brothers and sisters can speak to this too. Any of us that have dealt with colorism on any level, to see someone reject what they've been naturally given is a very, very difficult thing. We're talking with Russ Dorsey of MLB.com, one of the really bright young stars in our business, and you're hearing exactly why he's one of those stars. Because of your experience of being immersed in the Dominican culture and being there in the DR, when you see Sammy Sosa with lighter skin, what do you think?
It bothers me, not because I have anything against Sammy, but like you just said, it is heartbreaking, because for me, I've grown up that Black is beautiful and that you have to embrace who you are. And Black people here in the States, just like Dominicans, we're so proud of who we are. And to see Sammy have to succumb to the pressure of lightening himself to feel accepted or feel this identity of success, or I can't truly be successful until I get rid of my darkness, it hurts, because he's such, and even today is such a large figure in the Dominican and to Dominicans, and it's like he could represent something so much better, by embracing who he is and just being Sammy, the Sammy that we saw for all those years. But it says something totally different to people, where it's like, well, this dude was on top of the world in the Dominican, and he did it. So I guess we have to do it too. And it seems it's sad because you're just like, man, this is a cycle that's just going to keep happening. And then for me, the other side of it is this divide between people wanting to accept being Afro-Latino and not being black at all. That's bothersome too, because it's just like, it's not like the idea that black is somehow this negative, just like you spoke about, like, it's not something that is just strictly, you know, restricted to the Dominican. It's happening in Jamaica. It's happening in China. It's happening in the Philippines. And this idea of lighter is always better. It's, you talk about things being systemic. That's at the grassroots level. That's something that's been affecting the world for a long time.
And when I talk about the diaspora, like where the slave ships went to and where they end up, where, you know, I had someone text in, and I appreciate my Mexican brother texting in and saying it's a problem in Latin America. And you go to Veracruz and you will find an enclave of former African descendants, and that there is an issue in Mexico now with that. I've been to Nicaragua and Costa Rica, and in Costa Rica, you have the Pacific side of Costa Rica are people who kind of look a little bit like me, but on the Caribbean side of Costa Rica, it's people who look a little bit more like Russ, and they've been persecuted since even them being on the Pacific side, which is not as tranquil as the Pacific side, is a big issue down there as well. So that's why I wanted to kind of help and bring this to light a little bit, so that people can understand that when we see the jokes about Sammy Sosa, at least I'm speaking for me and Russ, but I imagine that there are other people that feel this way too. When we see the jokes about Sammy Sosa, those jokes hurt because it buys into the idea that lighter or whiter is better. And it also hurts me personally because I feel for Sammy. I feel for someone looking in the mirror and not thinking he's beautiful, when if you go back to Sosa in the 90s and people looking at Sammy Sosa, you go, wow, that's a good looking man. And it wouldn't change that he, to a lot of people, him being dark skinned was part of the appeal. So it's a frustrating thing. And we're seeing skin bleaching products all across the world get more and more prevalent. And that's what's really scary about it.
I'm with you, man. And it's just like the idea of self-hatred and not loving yourself is it hits you deep, man. And for you and I, it's just like, I know Lawrence Holmes loves being black. Like, it oozes out of your pores. It oozes out of my pores. And not being able to embrace yourself as you were born, I can't imagine what it's like to go through that every day and have that battle of, I've reached the pinnacle of success in my sport. We can talk about how you got to that later. But to reach the pinnacle of success in baseball and still feel like you're inadequate, it's heartbreaking, man. It is.
Russ, you're a bit of a unicorn because you're one of the people in town that covers baseball that speaks fluent Spanish. I was talking about this with some friends the other day. I was talking with Rosie and Groats about this on Saturday on their show. I think that that's a really valuable thing. And I know that some of people's issues with Sosa also have to do with, well, you know, he spoke English, and then in front of Congress, he didn't speak English. And my reply to them is always, if you were pulled in front of Congress or Parliament in Mexico, and they were asking you questions in Spanish, mm-hmm. would you want to rely on your minimal language skills in Spanish, or would you want to say what you wanted to say in English and have it translated? Because I don't think that I know a little bit of Spanish, and there's no way in hell I would have on the record testimony of me talking in Spanish.
No, and I don't think people really understand how difficult it is to master a language. And I think you listen to Sammy, like today on Mully and Hall, Sammy's English is phenomenal for the fact that that dude was not born here. He was not raised here. And it's hard to understand and think and speak and answer questions and hear questions in two different languages. Like, it's something that I practice daily, I promise you. Like, if you come to my apartment, I have notebooks upon notebooks upon notebooks of different words, different phrases, questions that I may ask at some point. I try to translate my stories from English to Spanish just so I can get those repetitions. And even though I ask questions to players in Spanish, it's not something that's still easy. Like, it's something that I have to work at every day. So, yeah, I think when people are thinking about, and this goes for players in Major League Baseball today, like, if guys use translators, it's because you want to be able to have people understand what you're saying completely without any mishaps. And then even for me, like, that's one of the reasons I ask questions in Spanish to guys, because I want you to say how you feel in your language and to feel comfortable saying it without feeling like things will be misinterpreted and people can better understand you and where you're coming from and what you're saying, as opposed to it going through a secondary source. You know, primary sources are really important, and I'm getting the journalism nerd stuff now, but having that firsthand account from you out of your mouth is super important.
No doubt. And you're also having to learn two different versions of Spanish. Like, you're right. Learning the classroom Spanish, and now you have to learn baseball Spanish. And it's a right. Different thing. And each of the guys, there's subtle differences. I'll never forget, Russ, I had this incredible experience of when I first started to kind of relearn Spanish again. It was when the Cubs and the White Sox were playing over at Wrigley Field. I happened to be in the Cubs dugout, and I'm watching Ozzie Guillen and Lou Piniella speak Spanish, and you would have thought that they were speaking two in totally different languages, because Ozzie's speaking Venezuelan street Spanish. I think Ozzie finished sixth grade. Lou Piniella is speaking Castilian Spanish. They understood each other, but you can see the differences in tone and dialect. And all of those things are things that have to be taken into account when you're talking about discussing things with Spanish-speaking players.
You're right. And it's like, for me, I learned a Dominican dialect of Spanish. So my Spanish, when it comes to baseball, is very familiar to guys. And it sounds like what they hear. But then there's also, like you said, there's slang in there. There are words that are different in the Dominican than they are in Colombia or in Venezuela. So it's just like, all right, now I have to learn the same word, but three different meanings of that word. And so I have to know where a guy's from when I'm talking to him, because maybe he doesn't understand this word because it means something different here. And it's that whole thing. But it's also the cool part of language and learning where people come from. And it's cool for me because now I can communicate with people using terms from their hometown, whether it's Caracas or whether it's Santiago in the Dominican or Medellin in Colombia. It's like, I can understand guys and guys can understand me. And then I can better tell fans here in the States a story about this guy and who he is.
Russ, I appreciate your time, man. Thanks for diving deep on this subject with me. I knew that you were the right person to be involved in this. And I'm telling you that this kid right here, this is going to be one of the big stars in media, in baseball media, and I'm very glad to know him. He has busted his butt, and you can tell that he knows what he's talking about, and he cares about how he goes about doing his job. Russ, thanks for being on, man.
My dude, I will talk to you soon.
You got it. That's Russ Dorsey of MLB.com. I'm so jealous of these young cats, man, that got it all together. How Russ gonna be that young and he know that much? It's not fair. I gotta get on it, man. I gotta start reading again and traveling. Well, maybe not traveling, at least not yet. But to have that experience of being able to live inside a couple different cultures when you're 18, really, really valuable. I appreciate you giving me the space to talk about that. I see via the text line that there are a lot of people that can relate, and it has become a thing that's happening worldwide that is really scary. When the denouncing of darker skinned people, it's disgusting. But I appreciate it. Real talk. If you're Mexican, I've had people in this text thread right now at 312-644-6767. They've been Mexican, Cuban, Thai, Dominican, Puerto Rican that have jumped in and given their thoughts on it. It's something that's worldwide and it's terrifying. So keep that in mind. The next time that you see someone crack on Sammy Sosa's skin, understand where that comes from. What you're really laughing at is him not liking or appreciating his skin tone because of what's happened to him and what's happening in the Dominican Republic and in countries worldwide. Back after this on The Score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Yeah! Do that Nelly thing. You saw for a couple of seconds, and Herbie, I enjoyed, before I get to some like serious football news, I enjoyed your tweets last night about some of the really kind of tangential things that they showed in the documentary that you didn't like. So what were the things that made you mad when they brought that documentary? Because there was a lot of B-roll of stuff that didn't seem to have a lot to do with the story that was being told.
Like, they showed a picture inside of Billy Goat Tavern. I mean, why? Like, they weren't showing, like, somebody being interviewed inside the Billy Goat Tavern. Billy Goat Tavern's not germane to the story. That made no damn sense. And the fact that they showed Griffey, good, but then, like you said, they treated him as if he was some failure for hitting 56 home runs and is some garbage player. Ugh, this Griffey he went 0 for 4 that day and thus wasn't in the home run chase. What a bum.
What a bum. This guy who hit 56, 56, and 48 home runs in that 3-year stretch.
And not
what an absolute bum.
Not a sniff of steroids attached to his name. Just greatness. Like, don't put Griffey in the documentary at all if you're not going to speak to him, firstly. And secondly, you could say at the beginning of the year, hey, at the beginning of the year, we thought it's going to be Griffey and McGuire. Allude to it and then go away from him. But the whole damn thing was McGuire's the main story, Griffey's secondary, and Sosa is like secondary or tertiary in that regard, but they spoke to him. So it didn't make any sense. That thing was so discombobulated. I didn't like it at all. It was a waste of 2 hours. And like you said earlier, the pride flag and Black Lives Matter, they didn't even like address it. Like
it was really like strange.
I'm supposed to subliminally like, oh yeah, man, these 98 home runs are great. I like that they're showing the Black Lives Matter. I thought it was gratuitous, and it really steps on the movements of Pride and Black Lives Matter by just showing it in a thing that has nothing to do with it and don't speak to it.
And Herbie, if you wanted to do that, where's the ballpark? That neighborhood is a great place to talk about pride. That neighborhood and its relationship with the Cubs over the last 35 years, you could actually have a genuine conversation about what pride has meant to the Wrigleyville area. So, I mean, it's the non sequiturs that ended up happening in that doc were really, really bizarre. And I felt bad because I'll tell you, I was looking forward to it. I'm kind of in the same boat that Evan is in, where I was looking forward to it, and it just was incomplete. And I don't know if ESPN rushed them, but all you need to know is that after every one of the Last Dance documentaries, and even the first episode of the Lance documentary, Scott Van Pelt was spending time talking about that on the Sports Center that followed. You know what he did last night coming out of this documentary? He talked about golf. So that lets you know kind of where things stand.
And it's like it's that just, thing, Lawrence, like when you're watching a sports game in Chicago or back in the day when they're at Allstate Arena, they'll show a B-roll of somebody making a deep dish pizza or being at the Bean. I'm like, they're in Allstate. They're in Rosemont. Come on. I get it, but also, stop. Please just stop.
All right.
Just show me around the stadium. Like in Champaign, whenever they show a game, they show this film of, I think, Neal Street that's from 2098. Or 2098, 1998. Sorry, I'm mixing up my years. I'm messing
going
up.
Going forward.
1998, and I'm like, I could see those cars are old. Just have somebody who's on that crew go to Neal Street and take a B-roll of a bus moving down the street. Hey, we're in Champaign, guys. You see us? Ha-ha. Here's the game.
Well, why don't we do this? We got a little bit of time. If you'd like to text us, this is what I'd like for you to text us. And you can text us now at 312-644-6767. What things are you seeing on sports broadcasts to set the scene in Chicago that you're sick of seeing? Like, what are those standard go-to just stock pieces of footage that people see whenever there's an establishing shot of a game at Soldier Field or 35th and Shields or Wrigley or the United Center? What are the things that you're just damn tired of seeing? I'll start, and you can text it in at 312-644-6767. Enough with the deep dish pizza. Unless you're going to go to a place that hasn't already been talked about. I don't mean to besmirch any of the great deep dish pizza places, but if you're going to take me to Pequod's, cool, fine. But if you're limited to some of the chains that people around the country already know about, you can cut that nonsense out.
And as here's an idea, talk about, Lawrence, like, I don't know if you're going to say it. Go ahead, finish your point, sorry.
Here, as someone who lives on the South Side, I will give you this little tip from me to you. I've spent a lot of time on my bike, but you can see this from your car. You know what's a great vantage point of Chicago? The view from the South. Go to Lakeshore Drive and turn around at 57. Go to the museum and turn around. Then head back north. And you tell me if the view of Chicago from about 45th Street isn't the most beautiful view. You could do that view instead of doing the view where you're just on the lake and you're showing. And even at this point, the river. And I think Chicago's river is undefeated. It's like my favorite place. But outside of the point, Promontory Point is actually my favorite. But you can do a different shot of downtown Chicago from the South. All right, Herbie, you were saying.
Like, you were saying deep dish, and I think you've spoken on this before. Chicagoans mostly prefer the tavern style.
Yes!
So can we establish that? Like, hey, you want some pizza? I know they're known for this deep dish thing, and we're keeping on this narrative that deep dish is Chicago's pizza. Cool. But you know what? Let's go out to a tavern style, which regular Chicagoans eat on a weekly basis. and have some yes. of that pizza.
The Southside Tavern-style pizza is something that we're also known for, but apparently only in Chicago. Even though that's the most type of pizza that gets sold here. Because we all know that you can only have deep dish like once every 3 months. It's a lot. Because it's a casserole. So send me your text. I look forward to seeing them. Some of them are coming in. I'll get to some of those and we'll talk about Kyle Long and what he's been tweeting and why the NFL has got a problem on its hands. We'll discuss that next here on The Score. So Shep sent me a picture of his lovely daughter, because that's what he does, to tell me to promote the show that's coming up next. And she's just passed out on the floor. And he goes, she's breathing, as much as it might not appear that way. So I told him, I'm going to need a wellness check, because I don't like it. I need a wellness check on the little one. But she does have her passy in, and she looks so cute. Zach Zaidman and Matt Spiegel are going to host the McNeil and Parkin show today. Mickey Morandini's going to be – oh, Swyka's going to be on. Julie Swyka's going to be on at 3:40. There's someone who covers Sammy Sosa and the White Sox. I'm sure she's got some things to say about the documentary. I would suggest that you listen at 3:40. You should listen the whole show, but particularly at 3:40, because Swyka's going to be on the air. I've enjoyed looking at your text messages on things that you don't want to see anymore when people are doing their establishing shots of Chicago. The deep dish thing, like, people are very angry about that, and I completely agree. And if you got to do the pizza thing, I brought up Pequot's, which is fairly well known. Inside the city, people love it. But, yeah, a place like Rose Angeles, like, do an off-the-beaten-path pizza place. You know what I love, Herbie? We were talking about this on Friday. How about this? Bears, Lions, and to set the tone, they end up at Italian Fiesta on 47th and Lake Park. Now we're talking. That's Chicago.
Just went there on Friday.
Delicious, right?
Oh, can't beat it. And it held. I drove that from 47th to Ravenswood. Held up.
And you know what? I think that that's actually become, like, my favorite thing. I don't want to eat pizza hot. I want it warm. Because I want to give the flavors a chance to congeal, and I don't want to burn the roof of my mouth. I feel like we should be guests on the I'm Fat podcast.
And
by the way, those guys did a podcast this past week. Our guy Rick Camp and Jay Zawoski. They did a draft, like a fast food draft, where they were picking their favorite. Like, you had to pick, I think it was a burger, fries, a beverage, dessert, and an extra side from wherever you want it. And Rick Camp got pantsed. Jay Zawoski treated him like he was Ryan Pace. It's a great episode. If you're not downloading or subscribing to the I'm Fat podcast, you're going to see the decisions that Campy makes, and you're going to be like, dude, what happened to your draft board?
I mean, it's easy.
Your draft board was trash.
It's, what is it, Whopper, McDonald's fries, give me a shake from Steak and Shake. Was the extra item?
Well, here's the thing. They got into an argument about this. Does the shake count as a beverage? And the reason that Jay argued that it didn't and it made sense to me was you're never offered the shake as part of a value meal. You got to get upcharged for the shake. So the shake should probably fit in the dessert category. So here it was. It was burger, chicken, fries, extra side, beverage, dessert. And it has to be, the places that you choose have to have a drive-thru. So think about that. Anyway.
And
put your list together.
As a fat, I would say that carrying a pizza from in a car from that store to your house, the best way to do that, if you don't have a specialized pizza like carrier, is to put it on the ground on the passenger seat.
That's what I do all the time. If I go get a pizza from Peace, that's what I do. It goes on the floor of the passenger seat. You don't want that cheese to slide. New Haven style. Let's go. So Kyle Long has been tweeting over the last couple of weeks, and it kind of made people kind of raise an eyebrow when he started talking about, because he had lost, I think, 60 pounds or something like that. And then he started talking about gaining weight, that he was trying to gain weight again. And people are like, oh, does that mean that Kyle is going to give football a try again? And I think that he is interested in playing football again and maybe not playing for the Bears, which would bum some people out, but it doesn't bum me out, because they were done with him, and it feels like, even though it hurt, he's at a place where he's probably done with them. So he started tweeting out a lot this morning, and there was a lot to react to. He started talking about the staff in particular and how he wanted it on the record. Hey, they fired me. I have not retired from football. They fired me. Here's his tweet. I didn't retire. I got fired. I will know with conviction whether I'm done for good or not in the next few weeks. Full transparency, I miss football, but at what cost? I'm most likely going to be on a golf course instead of the gridiron. But he's at least thinking about it, and I don't think that he's thinking about playing for the Bears. I wish him a lot of luck. I want him to be happy. There is a point after he was done playing that he seemed super happy. And I know that if he wants to do the media thing, people are going to be lining up to offer him money. And they should, because he's already better at it than a lot of ex-athletes. But if he wants to keep playing, I think that he shouldn't limit himself to just having had played for the Bears. If he wants to keep playing and he feels like he can contribute, he should go out there and play. Meanwhile, in the NFL, there's a significant problem going on. And that problem is, how is all of this going to work? How are we going to see football be played when there's still a health crisis that we haven't quite figured out? And this is the headline from NFL.com that broke the story. Grant Gordon with this story. Multiple Cowboys and Texans players have tested positive for COVID-19. So that's where we're at. This is going to keep happening. For some of us, it's just a matter of, are leagues and teams going to be comfortable with multiple positive tests? How comfortable are they going to be? Is there a threshold of it going through a team that shuts a team down? Are there going to be expanded rosters? Here's part of the story. Multiple Houston Texans and Dallas Cowboy football players, including Pro Bowl running back Ezekiel Elliott, have recently tested positive for COVID-19. NFL Network insider Ian Rappaport and NFL Network's Tom Pelissero reported Monday. None of the players are believed to have been in their team facilities, and the Cowboys and Texans have followed proper health protocols. Elliott's agent told Rappaport that the Dallas standout is, quote, feeling good. The team, however, issued a statement that it could not provide information. Quote, due to federal and local privacy laws, we are unable to provide information regarding the personal health of any of our employees. Close quote. So HIPAA laws. Players testing positive is a development that was predicted by Dr. Alan Sills, the NFL's chief medical officer. Quote, we fully expect we will have positive cases that will arise. You're letting people back into the facilities. There's 5 weeks before training camp. The NFL thought they had all the time in the world. They do not. Kenny Williams said some great stuff on the White Sox website about George Floyd and baseball. We couldn't get into it today because I want to watch it and really, really dissect it. I want to hear what Kenny has to say. But I promise you, I will bring it to you tomorrow, because I feel like he's one of the more important voices on this, and it's rare that Kenny talks about these things publicly. So we'll get to that tomorrow. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks to in being involved in the conversation with me and Russ. That means a lot to me that you were willing to listen, and maybe a few of you have texted in and said that you learned something that you didn't know. So thanks to that. Thanks for Russ for being just phenomenal. Thanks to Evan Altman. Thanks to Herb Lawrence and Adam Studzinski for their hard work. I'll see you tomorrow at noon. Zach and Speaks coming up next. Swika's with them at 3:40, so make sure you listen in to 670 The Score.
Bye-bye.
Tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Peace out.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.